This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Jay Hanselman, filling in for Michael Monks. Independence Day typically inspires many Americans to re-examine our nation's founding principles and their relevance to our current circumstances. Xavier University Distinguished Service Professor of History Roger Fortin believes that embracing our nation's founders' belief of one for all and all for one can teach us how to live with more meaning and purpose. Roger Fortin talked with Michael Monks about his recently published book, How the Ideals of America's Founders Lead Us to Purposeful Living.
Roger Fortin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
How the Ideals of America's Founders Lead Us to Purposeful Living. That's the name of the book. What inspired you to write it?
Well, having taught at Xavier University for over half a century and taught literally thousands of students, one of the themes that I emphasize in virtually all my classes were the founding fathers and their values. So it made sense to me to go ahead and write this now. I just finished writing a history of the Cincinnati Irish and so on. So I thought I'd go back to my roots, and I want to make sure that all my former students get a copy of the book as well.
In political debates, we often hear about, I mean, really from different political ideologies, different points of view, mm-hmm. people will quote the founders, and mm-hmm. this is what the founders intended to right. help emphasize their point. And as you explored these words and the wisdom of the founding fathers, do you see that there is room for different interpretations of what the founders intended?
If you mean by different interpretations, slanting it to your point of view, maybe reading too much into something they say and so on, that is commonly done virtually in every genre. But the founding fathers, who, by the way, each one of them, namely Jefferson, Madison, John Adams, wrote over 8,000 to 10,000 letters in their lifetime. So if you read their letters, and by the way, they've all been preserved, so you can actually go to the public library and say, I'd like to read some of Jefferson's letters. They'll give you about 10, 12 volumes of their letters. So when you read these letters, you find that they wrote a great deal on a variety of topics, ranging from weather, values, exercise, politics, and the like.
Yeah, they were great men.
They were.
But do you think then that they can be interpreted one way or the other? But you think there's got to be some type of political motivation if you're not taking it at face value.
Yeah. Well, they had their different interpretation on certain policies. But in terms of values, they were pretty much on the same page. So I don't think those should be those can't be misinterpreted.
And so that's how we're able to look back on them from
right.
your perspective and find a value system that is worth exploring and following today.
Correct.
I want to read part of the foreword. Your colleague at Xavier, history professor John D. Fairfield, wrote the foreword mm-hmm. for your book. And here's part of it. Quote, perhaps today we are finally paying attention to the vast and grotesque inequality in our society. The election of Donald Trump may well be one product of the recognition that the American dream is dead for too many. But the past 2 years have only further dampened hope in that dream. It is time to reengage the vision of Abraham Lincoln, who himself engaged and updated the vision of the founders. Lincoln embraced the Declaration of Independence rather than the Constitution as the true American charter. Now, mm-hmm. I know those aren't your words.
Right.
They're included in the foreword here, but maybe you can help us understand what Professor Fairfield meant
by
that.
Well, Fairfield is very much engaged in public history. That's his field of specialization. And he is very concerned with the direction of society today, very concerned about climate change and the like and so on. So, and he's more, as he points out in the foreword, he's more morose than I am. He's not as optimistic about what the founding fathers' values can mean for individuals to live a more purposeful life. So to me, when I wrote this book, I was less concerned about the current administration, because administrations come and go. But the founding ideals, the founding fathers' ideals, they're a great force in our history. And every generation, we've seen an advancement of freedom, equality, and so on. So even though they had their flaws, they had their failings, their ideals are much greater than their flaws. So the civil rights struggles, the women's rights struggles, the gay struggles are advancing. They're all based on these ideals. So even though we're a country founded with the Declaration of Independence on the one hand and the institution of slavery, we've made progress. And these ideals are still the best hope for mankind.
The The president, Donald Trump, when he was campaigning in 2016, famously said that the American dream is dead. Do you find that that's a common perspective of people? Do they feel like the dream is dead?
Well, that's regrettable because it was so essential to what the architects of the nation had in mind. Keep in mind, when they wrote statements like, each one of us is entitled to inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, what they emphasized, Michael, was that each one of us should live as fulfilling a life as possible, and we should help others enjoy life as much as possible. So they want to act as selflessly for the common good and so on. So if we read the Founding Fathers' ideals and become less concerned about the concept of a nation of laws, which we should be, but concerned about their values, there's so much to learn. They cared about how individuals led their lives, helping others, serving others.
And they didn't always get along?
No, they did not. But they remained good colleagues. A good example of that would be Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. Even though they were not members of the same party, they remained friends throughout their life, and they corresponded with one another. And as you probably know, at least some of the listeners would probably remember, that Jefferson and John Adams died on the same day, on July 4th, 1826. Jefferson a few hours before John Adams.
It doesn't get any more star-spangled than that.
Right, exactly. Very providential.
For sure. So how do you think the American dream has evolved since that expression first entered the language, which I believe in the book you attribute to President Nixon as...
Well, as president, he was the first one to use it.
Okay.
But there was a historian, James Truslow Adams, who popularized the term. He wrote a book in 1930, and in it he used the term 30 times. And since then, it's caught on. Nixon was the first one to use it, but I think Ronald Reagan interpreted it the best.
So if you date it back to, almost 100 years, if you're going back to the 1930s, 80, 90 some odd years ago, how do you think the idea of what the American dream represents has evolved since then?
Yeah. Well, many people will interpret the American dream to mean fame, success, material success, but really the architects of the nation and the American Romantics emphasize living a fulfilling and happy, conscientious life, the quiet life, and so forth. As a matter of fact, Adam Smith, the father of capitalism, defined what happiness is. He says, happiness is when an individual has tranquility and enjoyment. It has less to do with the economic success of an individual, but how an individual leads her or his life.
So even that seems to be up for interpretations.
Yes.
If the American dream is, well, I'm going to have a piece of land and a family and a nice car, or is my American dream to feel contentment with the peace and the quiet and tranquility?
Yeah, and be at peace with yourself. There are, regrettably, in American history, but not only in our culture, but in virtually advanced cultures in the world, people spend more time caring about the gloss of a car than caring about the content of their character. And I think that's what happiness connotes, being at peace with yourself, having inner values and the like.
What do we know about the founders and their own pursuit of capitalistic ideals or their pursuit of more personal and tranquil ideals?
Yeah. Well, having read many of their biographies and having read thousands of their letters, I can say without any reservation that they cared more about how an individual led his life than not. So Thomas Jefferson, for example, he would write letters to his colleagues and to his relatives and say, spend a lot of time walking, observe details, enjoy the serenity of flowing water, and so on. So they believed that individuals should be less focused on acquiring things, but in enjoying relationships they have with others and also enjoying the beauty of nature and so on. So yeah, they cared a great deal about how individuals led their lives.
How do we apply that principle then, the idea of just listening to the quiet water, to the chaos of just day-to-day living in modern society?
Yeah. Well, it requires some discipline. It means taking the time to reflect upon your own behavior, your own characteristics. And in the back of the book, I have, for example, a few comments that some of the founders made, like Franklin and others. Well, Franklin, he wrote down like 12, 13 virtues that he thought individuals should be focusing on. John Adams kept a diary. So the point here is that you need to take time to meditate, to reflect, to assess how you live your life.
I actually flagged that part of the book where you talked about Franklin and Adams. I wanted to read a little piece of that. You talked about how do Americans pursue happiness? How do they pursue pleasure? Formulas to happiness and guides to pleasurable living have been available for a long time. Hundreds of books, you go on to say. But yes, you described that Benjamin Franklin created this list of what you call moral structures, strictures, it says here. And it was called the utmost importance to the felicity of life. Mm-hmm. And then John Adams, conversely, engaged in, quote, remorseless self-scrutiny in mm-hmm. his diary, and it urged individuals to, quote, be just and good. How do you explain their different approaches to that philosophy?
Well, they had their own style, their own personalities. So Ben Franklin was more inclined to be observant of various types of virtues. John Adams was very focused on his own behavior, so that's why he kept a diary. Franklin never kept a diary. He would just follow those virtues. So they had their own different style. But I guess what works for one person may not necessarily work for another. So I guess one can find out what works for him or what works for her.
But they do seem to be rooted sort of in the same ideal.
Yeah, very much so. And the other thing is, keep in mind what John Adams said, and I think I mentioned this in the book several times. The purpose of government is to provide happiness to as many people as possible. And people know when they're well used, when they're happy and so on. So that's the purpose of government, according to John Adams. And his colleagues agreed with him. So they believe that you can tell if people are generally content. So obviously, you can take a look at our own society today, and we can identify moments when we're not living as well as we should. We're not focusing on these values as much as we should. But each one of us can make a difference. We can help lift up individuals. We can make a difference in other people's lives. Each person has human worth. No one should be made to feel insignificant.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. My guest today is Roger Fortin, the Distinguished Service Professor of History at Xavier University. His new book is How the Ideals of America's Founders Lead Us to Purposeful Living. And you note in this book that Americans have a recurring hopefulness about mm-hmm. the future.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, that's a very good question, Michael. I would say that in my study of other societies in the world, no society has been as optimistic about its future. And I think a lot has to do with what the founding fathers carved out. They believed that what they were putting together was a moment that would be special for the Western world. That's the world that they knew. And by the way, we were the first republic in the Western world. So in a sense, they would believe that they were thinking about the future. They hoped that each generation would make life better and so on. So that futuristic view is really embedded in each generation of Americans. Now, sometimes we overstate the importance of certain advances, thinking, oh, that will do it. So back in the 20s and 30s, people were exhibiting faith in machinery and the ideals to make things better. But the 1870s and 80s, it was electricity. After World War II, it's a new technology and so on. Well, at the end of the day, unless we really focus on those values that the founding fathers put together when they put together the nation that they did, these new technologies will not make things better. They'll only make them better if they're fused with the values.
Well, speaking of new technology, it seems that today with so much access to so many different media and perspectives, mm-hmm. both honest and dishonest perspectives, that there's just so much stress involved in being an American, like a constant argument about picking sides or inconsistency on what is right and what is wrong, mm-hmm. depending on which politician is called into question. What do you think the founders would have to say about the state of their country today?
I think they would be appalled because they put so much faith in honesty. I would say I was reluctant at first, Michael, to write Chapter 4, which has to do with contemporary threats to the Republic, because it deals a little bit with the politics of today. I was more focused on the value, but I had to address it only because, to me, the great demon in our society today is lying. not being truthful. And regrettably, with social media, people can manufacture facts. They can falsify things. And when we have to keep in mind what Jefferson said, honesty is the first chapter of wisdom. So, and Jefferson many times would write letters to his colleagues. He said, if we have a free press and every person is able to read, all is safe. So consequently, we have to ensure that our society today focus on what is true. What are the real facts? That, to me, is a great threat to our society, the falsification of data.
Maybe you also have a chapter on the importance of a liberal education, mm-hmm. which is to say humanities and history and philosophy and those sorts of things. So I'm wondering, based on what you just said, what role our education system plays in maintaining a free press and having a literate society that comprehends what is honestly written?
I think, and I have to be careful how I respond to this, Michael, because it could be misinterpreted, but I would say that a high percentage of graduates of schools are attentive to values and the like, but they're deluged and overwhelmed with all kinds of data, and they don't necessarily have the time to really go to the sources and study them. But I would say a greater number of people in our society today than not understand the importance of virtue, liberty, understand the value of caring for others and the like. But there is, regrettably, a segment of society that is inattentive to that. And that group can be misled with fear and so on.
Do you think that our culture is moving away from those subject areas, the humanities, history, philosophy?
I think more colleges and universities today provide courses in philosophy, history, literature, and the like, ethics. So I would like to think that it's not very much in disfavor, but it is in disfavor in some circles of society. But I'm very optimistic that as more and more people take the time to implant in their minds the principles of virtue and liberty, they will be able to develop themselves as fully as possible. And in the process, help make it possible for others to live meaningful and enjoyable lives as well.
As another presidential campaign flares up again, we hear a lot about equality, both for people as individuals based on their identities, but also economic inequality. And you note in your book, in your chapter about the American dream, quote, "Of course, there's a difference between equality of opportunity for individuals to achieve their potential and that of equality of condition. Mm-hmm. While most people would not expect equality of condition, they want as much equality of opportunity as possible. As the founding fathers knew, America can never have 100% equality, liberty, and fairness available to everyone. However, as James Madison put it so well, Americans, quote, should strive toward the least imperfect society possible."
That's one of my favorite quotes, by the way, Madison's quote. To strive to be as the least imperfect as a person, as a society as possible. There'll always be flaws, there'll always be mistakes, but we can always make things a little better.
It seems like a reasonable quote and mm-hmm. philosophy, but I'm wondering how, and you work with college students, so you see young people. I wonder how you take this message, particularly to those who are young, who have a more idealistic and optimistic worldview that, yes, there is enough for everyone, and yes, the playing field can be leveled. How do you tell them that maybe that's not entirely true?
Well, what do you mean by not entirely true?
Well, if we can't make society perfect, mm-hmm. and there are kids who believe that, yes, we can.
Well, then they have to be made aware that there's never been a moment in society where things are perfect.
And if we were to get specific then, if people were talking about the wage gaps or the minimum mm-hmm. wage that you know, we believe that the minimum wage should be $15, and this is how it's going to work across the board.
Right.
And you try to come at them with a more reasonable, well, mm-hmm. maybe $15 in this part of the country because this is how much it costs to live there.
Right.
But in this part of the country, maybe $12 is a more appropriate right. minimum wage. Is that kind of the idea of the least imperfect?
Well, yeah, you evaluate the data, you evaluate the information. And that was what you just described, Michael, is very sensible. Each community should really assess its own cost system and so on and come up with what is fair for people to live within reason
And I didn't mean to get you a position on minimum wage, but I was just using that as an
example. That's a good point. And I think people, I mean, you take the whole notion of climate change, for example. That's an issue that is very serious, and scientists across the world are aware of it. But we all know it will never be resolved in any one generation. This is a sort of thing that will take time. But can we make things better? We can. We take small steps and we advance toward it.
Do you think if more people were familiar with that quote from the founding father, James Madison, who talked about striving toward the least imperfect society, that maybe our political conversations would be better rather than fighting for one thing and being immovable from that position?
Mm-hmm. That's well put, Mike. I agree. I agree totally. I think people, politicians are well advised to level with the American people. And one thing, too, that I emphasize, the founding fathers believed that people have to have, they have to be grounded in values. And it would seem to me that elected officials, they're sworn to not only uphold the Constitution, but they're also sworn to do what is best for their constituency in terms of what's best in terms of their lives and so on. So they should be acting out of deep convictions. And unfortunately, there are individuals in our society who believe that our politicians are not always acting out of conviction.
As you said earlier, you do have a chapter dedicated to the contemporary threats to the American Republic. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you think that the greater threat is internal or external from our borders.
Internal. I think what you cannot take away is the fact that our society is the strongest militarily in the world. It can defend itself well. But internally, there's a lot here that's... let me quote Condoleezza Rice, the former Secretary of State. She was interviewed recently in which she said that America seemed to have lost its way, lost its understanding of certain values and principles. And I think that is potentially very dangerous to our society. Now, if you had asked me that question a decade or so ago, I would not have answered it the same way I just did to you. So a lot has happened in the past 10 years. And it predates, by the way, the election of the recent president. So we have to be concerned about honesty, values, and caring about others, one for all and all for one.
To conclude the book, you quote Robert Livingston, and I want to share that quote with our listeners. Mm. You write in his 4th of July oration in New York in 1787, Robert Livingston, a member of the Committee of Five that drafted the Declaration of Independence, pointed out that, quote, a precious deposit is given into our keeping. We hold in our hands the fate of future generations. And then you write, individually and collectively, we need to continually seed, plant, fertilize, flower, and harvest America's ideals in ever-changing circumstances to make it possible for every child and adult to have an opportunity to live up to their potential. How do you think today we as a nation are doing with that message?
Well, we should be reminding ourselves of that. Fortunately, there are many, many families in our society that are in fact living true to those words. They care about the future for their children, their grandchildren, and so on. So what we need is apply it on a larger scale. So I would say the family structure is a good model. It can work on a larger platform than simply one individual family platform.
Roger Fortin is the Distinguished Service Professor of History at Xavier University. His new book, How the Ideals of America's Founders Lead Us to Purposeful Living. Roger Fortin, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Roger Fortin will be at Joseph Beth Booksellers in the Crestview Mall for a talk and book signing on July 17th at 7 p.m. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Today's technical director was Dave Shermer. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Jay Hanselman, filling in for Michael Monks.